Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Even in terms of propaganda, it has been much more successful than the one that you saw during Soviet times.
Hello and welcome to Free Exchange. I'm John Ashmore, the editor of CapEx. This week, for the final instalment of our Illiberalism in Europe series, we're going to the furthest boundary of the continent, beyond the Black Sea, to Georgia, Armenia and Azerbaijan. Our guest is Jamila Mamadova, a native of Baku and now a researcher at the foreign policy think tank, the Henry Jackson Society. I began by asking her how the three Caucasian states have managed their delicate position between Russia, Turkey and an increasingly unstable Iran.
It's a very interesting question. It's a very interesting neighborhood as well. It's very dynamic at the moment. Well, you can see what's going on in Ukraine, for example. We had similar issues happening in Georgia a while ago when Georgia was obviously at war with Russia. So many things are happening there. It's very difficult for a country of a size of Azerbaijan or Georgia or Armenia, indeed, to somehow, if not try and defend itself from Russia's or Iranian or any other big powers' politics in the region, but at least to successfully balance politics internally, as well as try and balance its foreign policy, because as you correctly mentioned, there are different powers around that region and in the region which are interested to get more involved. I mean, by that I obviously mean energy politics. We know that Western countries like UK, for example, have much invested, for example, in the economy of Azerbaijan. We're talking about energy investments. Azerbaijan itself is one of the biggest investors in Georgia, by the way, again, in the energy sector. But we have Russia also investing a lot in Georgia in energy area. So Armenia is almost 99% dependent on Russia in almost every strategically important sector of its economy. So as you can see, to counterbalance any internal interference in regional affairs becomes really difficult when you have a situation like this, where countries are so much economically interdependent, not only on each other, but also on external players.
But who do you think matters more? If you're an Azeri government minister, are you more concerned about what's happening in Washington, in Moscow, or in Tehran, even?
Honestly, I think you should worry about everyone who you just mentioned. Again, in order to successfully balance your foreign policy, you have to be very well aware of what's going on in Iranian political circles, what the Kremlin thinks about your next move, even about, again, your next big energy project with the West. You would try to take their considerations into account. But obviously you would try and make sure that your politics remains independent, that you remain a sovereign country. But I have to say that in the last maybe 7 years, for smaller countries like Azerbaijan, Georgia, Armenia, we can talk about Belarus as well, it became much more difficult to successful a balance between West and East, because Russia has Russia became a much more important player in the region. It became much stronger than it used to be. It's not the Russia that we used to see in the 90s, you know, with corrupt army not being able to interfere successfully anywhere. We have seen on the example of Ukraine how they successfully managed to annex Crimea, and also what they're doing now in Donbass. Frankly, it's worth watching, and I think they have been extremely successful.
I mean, are people in these countries, I'm thinking particularly mm-hmm. Georgia, are they still scared of the prospect of Russian military intervention at some point?
I would say they don't want to provoke anything like that anymore, just because Georgians have already suffered quite a lot by losing their territories to those separatist forces in South Ossetia and Abkhazia. Azerbaijan doesn't want to lose more of its territories either, although it's not a direct conflict with Russia. But everyone is aware that Russia has been supporting Armenia quite closely from the early 90s, and even before. The history of the relationship dates back to the Tsarist times. So nobody wants to lose more of its territory and risk any economic disturbances, as you can imagine.
Because there's been this, perhaps a lot of our listeners wouldn't know, there's been this kind of stale conflict in mm-hmm. a place called Nagorno-Karabakh.
Correct.
How would you characterize that?
Well, to be honest, it wasn't much said about it in the media, indeed, but it's a conflict which is still ongoing. I wouldn't say it's a frozen conflict, because people continue dying on both sides. A few years ago in 2016, if I'm not mistaken, there was a major war incident there in Karabakh, and both Azeris and Armenians died. It is still a major issue for the countries in question, and obviously the conflict makes it much more difficult for both Armenia and Azerbaijan to overcome their, if you will, Soviet legacy, and to incorporate better into Western kind of structures. European Union, NATO here. Obviously, we didn't have that issue. I would think we would be much more successful in building closer relationship, including in trade with European Union or the United States.
How would you describe the post-Soviet kind of political and economic settlement? Because I know that in Georgia, for example, they've actually had a quite radical kind of free market, set of reform.
That's very true. But on the other hand, we know how very much dependent they are on Russia. Again, in terms of energy policies, they have to counterbalance. For example, they made a very pragmatic choice to start and purchase more energy from Azerbaijan to somehow counterbalance Russian monopoly on their energy market.
Again, this is the Georgians.
Yeah. Obviously, everybody else is in pretty much similar situation. We also know what happened in Ukraine when a war started there back in 2014. Russia, because it's so influential in the Commonwealth of Independent States organization, it successfully found ways of pressurizing countries like Kazakhstan, for example, to block trade with Ukraine, or to block Ukraine from continuing trading, exporting, importing from other states which are parties to the organization. And Ukraine found it increasingly difficult to deal with that. So I think that the Caucasian countries are in a similar position, and they know that if something goes wrong in their relationship with Russia, then they should expect something like visa restrictions, imports, ban on imports, exports, and etc.
And is the response to that to turn towards, you mentioned the EU and NATO, is there mm-hmm. much, public opinion in the three Caucasian states in favour of joining, say, NATO, or in favour of joining the EU?
I think the society is pretty much divided. If we're talking about Georgia, I think because of the war and because of the consequences of the war and because the West didn't successfully interfere in the political process on Georgia's behalf and it couldn't support it as much as it probably could, the public opinion is a bit divided on that matter. Again, public wouldn't want any war there, and there are no guarantees coming from the West to assure the public that they will stand by these three considerably like small nations.
We sometimes read that, you know, from Western analysts, yeah, that Russia is kind of massing on the borders as if it's the Soviet Union or something, and they're about to launch a land invasion of Poland or something. I mean, how real? What do you think their actual ambitions are? Are they just there trying to slightly provoking the West?
Like, also coming back to the previous point, if I made, I think Russians have been extremely successful in manipulating public opinion in all three states. Again, this is a propaganda which is pretty much against the West. And every failure on behalf of the West in foreign policy almost immediately turns into a success on Russian side. And Russians present it as Western failure, that the West is not good enough, it does not support the Caucasus or any other country in trouble. We are the ones who are prepared to give you guarantees. So, you know, if you're in this kind of situation where somebody is actually offering you some help, you are confused. You don't know who to trust, and probably if you have a guarantee that at least Russians would not attack you again, you would probably stick with what Russians are offering.
Do you think that the Putin regime actually has big territorial ambitions, or is it just a matter of self-preservation?
Well, nowadays it's not as much about territory, if you will. I think it's about soft power and trying to expand your influence again through economic interdependence, through education. Again, Russians are very pro Russian language almost everywhere where you can find Russian minorities, not only in Caucasus but actually across Europe as well. And I think that trend is going to expand further. Whether Russians would turn that into any territorial conquest at a later stage, if you will, that would really depend, in my opinion, on President Putin's popularity. We sometimes hear about Russia trying now to maybe exert more pressure on Belarus, maybe even annex part of its territory. I'm not too sure whether this is indeed what's going to happen, but I'm pretty sure in the Kremlin they probably consider any option similar to the one that happened in Ukraine, just to boost President Putin's popularity. As you know, in 2024, legally, he's not allowed to be re-elected again. It's just not possible. Right. So he has to come up with some kind of solution again if he wants to stay in power. And I personally think that he's probably himself is not sure at this particular point what's going to happen. I think he at this point is trying to consider all his options, and we'll just see from, we'll take it from there.
I mean, there is a view that he's sort of never going to leave because he's sort of trapped himself in power, if you like, because if, as soon as he leaves, the scale of the theft and corruption that he's overseen will be...
That's very true. That's very true. But I also have to say that I think even if Putin goes, the system that he built, he successfully managed to rebuild the system. And many experts from within Russia say that it's actually much more, it's much more stable, it's much more well managed than, even in terms of propaganda, it has been much more successful than the one that you saw during Soviet times. So I think that he indeed managed, and if, by the way, if you ask Russians, many Russians would, I'm sure, tell you that indeed Putin almost saved us. He created a strong state, a state that is capable of, surviving any turbulences in the world, stemming from whatever.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices
down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Yeah, I mean, and it's fair to say that while a lot of us in the West think that Putin is very illiberal and repressive and so on, Russians don't necessarily see that as being a particularly bad thing. They might associate liberalism with the kind of poverty and chaos of the 90s after the breakup of the Soviet Union.
I think that the younger generation, like we don't remember what happened in the 90s, you know, after the collapse of the Soviet Union. But I think that some of some parts of Russian society are still quite conservative, and you have to keep that in mind. And Putin has been very efficient in talking to that part of society, you know, trying to convince them that he shares the same kind of values, again, values of Christianity, of traditional values, family values, and etc. And that's what people want. That's what they want to hear. That's what makes them believe that he is somebody who's going to protect them and protect their families, protect their values. It matters. You would be surprised, but it still matters.
Yeah, and I'm always struck by when sort of armchair commentators say that Putin's a populist. I think that's oversimplifying things. It strikes me that he's someone who uses different isms depending on who he's talking to.
That's very true. He's very efficient in talking to Muslims. He's really good in talking to Orthodox Christians. You know, even when you ask him about gays, I think recently he was commenting something on the LGBT issue, by the way, liberalism. He said, well, I never said that liberal democracy was a bad thing, which was a very interesting thing to hear. I mean, honestly, he knows how to talk to various groups or segments of society. You're absolutely right there. And I think that's what keeps Russia still, you know, united.
I mean, and we've talked a bit about we've talked about the countries who are in Russia's kind of southern orbit, the Caucasian countries, obviously a very kind of tumultuous region. I mean, how do you view the status of the Baltic countries, who are also part of the Soviet Union, albeit against their will? I mean, should they be as worried as some analysts think?
I think Putin is more interested now, and we see what's going on now in Belarus. We definitely received some warnings from there, again, from the expert community, as well as actually President Lukashenko himself. Obviously, there were conflicts between the two, like in trade area, and we saw that before when Russians tried to hold energy supplies to Belarus. Same happened with other things there, like milk and etc. Those sanctions, if you will, can be really painful for a country. And I think the reason why he's doing that is because, again, he tries to assert his power. He also tries to see what the public in Belarus thinks about, let's say, his next move, if it will be annexing some of the territories. They actually want to know in Russia what people of Belarus think.
Do you think that's a realistic possibility? Because it's not something we ever hear about. We hear a lot about Ukraine and a little bit about Ossetia and places, but Mm-hmm. Belarus is not really on anyone's radar.
It's not, but as some experts suggested, and I think it's quite an interesting suggestion, that at some point, because Putin cannot run for president election next time in 2024, he's actually looking at different possibilities where he can somehow, if not extend his presidential term, but somehow make it legal. And if a new state is created out of the union between Russia and Belarus, which is a new legal entity that could actually allow Putin to stay in power, maybe given Lukashenko a post of prime minister and then successfully running the country. But that's just one of the rumors, which I personally find quite interesting.
Yeah, do you think Lukashenko would be willing to give up power?
I don't think he has much choice. Again, whatever we hear in the media, whatever is coming from him, from his office and etc., criticizing Russia, in the end of the day, he's really well aware of what happened in Ukraine. He knows, he's very well aware of trade policies of Russia and all those trade wars that has been going on between his country and Russia, but also with as mentioned, Ukraine. I don't think he wants to hurt his position, significantly. I think he would want to stay in power and maybe even as a prime minister, but he would want to stay in power. He wouldn't want to go. But we'll see. I mean, it's really interesting what's going on now across the former Soviet Union, some Central Asian states where we actually saw some quite smooth transition of power. And I'm talking about Uzbekistan now, for example, or Kazakhstan, for example. But again, every country is specific, so we need to, you know, approach them on individual basis and really looking into what's going on the ground, trying to understand their cultures.
You mentioned Ukraine, though. I think that's probably the big country we haven't mm-hmm. really touched on yet. I mean, how yep. do you see the conflict there playing out? I mean, it strikes me that it's very unlikely that Russia will relinquish Crimea now, but that there might be some kind of settlement in Lugansk and the Donbass area.
I think there might be some settlement in Donbass region. I completely agree with you, and it's because the new president, Zelensky, he was elected on a platform to specifically end this war. I mean, obviously, we all very well understand that it's impossible to end this war without Russians' direct, you know, will. But what he wants to do, at least, is to try and maintain peace on that territory. He went to Donbass a few days ago, if I'm not mistaken, has talked to soldiers there. Some were some welcomed him not with a very positive remarks there, because not everybody's so keen to reaching peace with Russians. But he's trying. I think he has been elected on that particular promise. I don't think it will be an easy path for him, to be honest. But we'll see where he gets the country eventually.
If Ukraine manages to reform itself to become a little bit more of a mm-hmm. kind of Western-style, mm-hmm. liberal, free market mm-hmm. country, that presumably represents a threat to Russia, in the sense that Russians can look at mm. what's happening there and go,
Well, that's very true. One of the points that Russians always raised, especially after Maidan, was that, you know, we cannot allow for open border with Ukraine if Ukraine is part of the European Union, because we are not going to have free market on our territory. So how can we allow Ukraine to be part of it and then continue trading with Ukraine as usual? This cannot happen. And the same approach would be, I imagine, to any other country which would want to go in the same direction. So yes, Russia prefers to support perhaps businessmen in Ukraine who have been operating. I mean, it's not a recent development. Oligarchs have existed there since the early 90s. They built up their capital then. So I have survived almost every president there. Now, and again, obviously they had to, in order to survive internally, they had to somehow please Russians in a way, you know, just to survive in their internal struggle. So Russia automatically was involved, you know, it was part of that struggle. So to somehow today imagine that, you know, Ukraine would somehow abandon those very wealthy individuals and try and, you know, join the European Union. It just, you know, I think the agreement should happen within the Ukraine in the first place and between these people who are in charge of, now I would say they're in charge of large territories. They're almost regions. They're bringing their people to power. So it's an internal issue in the first place, and obviously Russians are just trying to use whatever is happening there internally for their particular interest.
Jamila, thank you very much indeed for joining us.
No problem. Thank you so much.
We look forward to reading you again on CapEx as well.
Thank you.
Cheers.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.